Okay, on the day of Pentecost, we have two very different stories of the coming of the Holy Spirit, right? We've got this great, wonderful story in Acts about how they're all gathered in one place and the Spirit descends upon them, and there are these divided tongues as of fire. It's actually the better word for divided is portioned. Isn't that great? Which sort of goes along with Paul's thing about everybody gets a gift according to what God gives out. So God portions out gifts to different people, and God portions out the Spirit to different people as God wills to give it to them. And so that's what the flame, the tongues of fire are like. What they are is this portion of the Spirit of God, which means that the Spirit of God lives in us, which is the whole business. And when Jesus breathes on them, he doesn't breathe in on them, he breathes into them. Just like at the beginning when God created human beings, breathed into them the breath of life, Jesus is doing that to the disciples in that upper room. The Spirit of God in us. This is an amazing thing. This is like, you can think of the Spirit being around us, but actually being in us. That God actually gives God's self to us in this way, so that we are living in the Spirit of God. Wow. As the story goes, everybody is given this gift of speaking. It's not speaking in tongues, but it's speaking in foreign tongues. It's speaking in different languages, and which is a really amazing thing, actually. That's a great gift. The more interesting gift to me, though, is not, and I think Luke points this out, it's not that people are speaking in a different tongue, it's that everybody's understanding in their own language. Isn't that lovely? There's a little bit of a small example of this is, everybody, you all know the languages of love, right? The love, you know. They limited it to five, which I think is very, it's not imaginative, right? And I can't remember what they all are, but, you know, clearly one is like physical affection, one is gifts, and one is doing kindness of service and all of this other stuff. I know one little boy whose language of love is, if you play with me, you love me. But there's a lot of love languages. But the interesting thing about that is, it's like, that might not be your native language, right? You know somebody's love language is a gift or whatever. If I know that, that's not my thing. Find, you know, there's some people who walk into a store or something, and they'll find something, and they'll go, oh, so-and-so would love this. This is the perfect gift for them, right? That ain't me. Never. Okay? So if I know that, and if I am attuned to it, I will say, oh wow, okay, well that's not me, but I know this person loves to receive gifts, and that's a sign of love, so I'm going to do that for them. It's not my native language, but it's theirs, right? So that's kind of the gist of this thing. And this is why what I think is just lovely about it is that everybody is hearing it in their own native language. It's like, now you're talking my language. And they can receive it better. And they know it. It's deep in their bones because it's their native tongue. It's their native language. And so, this gift, which is given, it is like the way in which, like, if you talk to somebody, it's why, for example, somebody who doesn't speak English and you try to speak in their language, that you'll just see them like, ah, you know, their countenance just is like, oh yeah, you're trying, this is great, and you just told me something really funny, but you were trying, you know. Like when I was in Nicaragua and I told everybody I'd done something silly and I told them I was embarazada. And they all went, no, you're not. No, that's because I just told them I was pregnant. Right? But they were, no. And they were just gathered around me, and they were, you know, it was a bunch of women, too. I don't know why it was a bunch of women at the time. But they were like, no, Pablo, no. Anyway, so yeah. But the fact of trying, of that. And so what God, in God's wisdom, God is like, okay, they're all going to be able to hear it in their own language. So that, like I said, it'll just go deep into their bones, and they'll get it. Right? So that's, I think, the real amazing thing about it is that it's in your own language. So, and the whole book of Acts, as we've been studying it, is these people going out and actually bringing this wonderful news of forgiveness, repentance and forgiveness, and God's love for people in the language, in the culture, wrapped into the culture into which people live, Right? It isn't like you've got to become like me in order to get it. In fact, that's one of the big controversies in the book of Acts. There are these people who are called Judaizers who say, oh no, they have, in order to follow Jesus, they have to first become Jews like us, and then they can follow Jesus. Then they can enter into the covenant of Abraham and into the life of Jesus. And Peter and Paul and the apostles say, no, that's not right. No. They are their own. They have their own culture. Jesus transcends culture and language, right? So that, no, they don't have to be like us. This isn't like, this isn't a club that they have to join in order to follow Jesus. No, none of that. And all through the book of Acts, that's what we get, is this kind of back and forth about it. And it's clear. The church lands on, no, they don't have to be just like us in order to receive Jesus. But they will receive Jesus when the language that we speak is theirs. So a lot of cool things happened on our trip, but I'm just going to tell you one story, the story of my friend Terry has a son named Jehun, and Jehun is he's probably 35, 36, somewhere in there now. And he is a filmmaker. He's a documentary filmmaker, and he's done all this incredible work. He goes, like, he used to live in New York, and he would follow people who are getting out of federal prison and trying to re-enter into their life in the community. And he did these documentaries about these guys coming out. And it was just, they're just stunning. They're beautiful. Now he works for the University of North Carolina. He lives in Durham, and we got a chance to visit with him. And on Thursday, we went to a Durham Bulls game, and he and I sat together. And somewhere between the third and the sixth inning, we just got talking and about his latest project. And so I missed three innings of the Bulls game. And anyway, he says, I said, so what are you working on? And he said, well, I just finished this project with the University of North Carolina has this program for combat veterans and with PTSD. And I said, oh, well, tell me. And so he was telling me all about the project and the way he went about it and the way he interviewed people and all this stuff. And it was just fascinating. And then he says, oh, and my dad says you had some work with veterans that you've done. And I said, yeah, it is. It's not really with PTSD. It's with this other thing. And he said, well, what are you talking about? And I said, well, it's this thing called, well, it's sometimes called moral injury, but it's the sense of their sense of guilt and shame at the things that they have done. Not what happened to them, but what they had done, that they just don't tell people about. And he said, oh, yeah, and he was talking, and he said, well, so what happens with that? And I said, well, I don't really know what happens. I know people come to the 3 or 4 days with us, and we are with them, and we walk with them, and we don't try to fix them, and we don't judge them, and they, in these days, they open up, and they get at some of the stuff that they've been denying all of these years. And he goes, wow. That's amazing. And so, so then we talked. Okay. So, my sense of that is that we enter into a relationship with people and we don't give them our language of judgment or of suspicion or any of that. We try to enter into it and it ends up that we are actually living in the communion, into the communication with them that they really understand. All right, so that was Thursday. Saturday night, I get to see Jehun again. And he says, you're not going to believe this. He said, I had lunch yesterday with one of the veterans that we've done this with. And he started talking, and I heard don't fix anything. I heard it. I heard this. Don't fix it. Don't fix it. Be with him. Be with him. And I was with him, and I talked with him. And, you know, he said, I said, uh, He goes, and you know what happened? And I said, I don't know what happened. He says, at some point in the conversation, he says to me, you know, I've never told anybody this before, but you know all that stuff that I did, not only was it horrible, but I enjoyed it. And that just eats at me. And Jae-hoon was like, don't fix it. Don't fix it. Don't fix it. And he didn't. That is just unbelievable, right? That in 2 days he heard this word, and then another day later he's in this context where he has to be listening for and to be attuned to the other person's native language, right? Isn't that beautiful? Nobody, I mean, if you wrote that in a play, people would go, that's too schmaltzy. You can't have it, right? But that's God. That's the Spirit of God poured out on all nations, right? This is happening throughout the world. This is happening. It's happening in your life. And here's the thing. What I think the celebration of Pentecost is not like, get out there and do this, but notice the times when it's happening. Watch. Listen, be aware that the Spirit of God is at work. And even when you're reading the news, Mr. Rogers, he used to say that his mother used to always tell him, look for the helpers. Right? Watch for the helpers, because they're always there. And I would turn it just a little bit. Watch for the sneaky Spirit of God, because it's always there. It's always working. Watch how the Spirit of love moves and transforms. That's the Pentecost. It's happening even now. And then put it in a context. Let me put this whole thing in the context of the celebration, the festival of Pentecost, which is a Jewish festival, one of the three festivals of pilgrimage. So everybody goes to Jerusalem, right? And originally what it was this celebration of the harvest. So it was basically a first fruits festival. You take the first fruits of the harvest, you take it to the temple, and you offer it up to God. Right? Beautiful prayers and everything. And when the temple was destroyed in 70 BC, it started taking on a different flavor. And what it was it became a celebration of the giving of the Torah at Mount Sinai. Okay, so Passover happens. The people are taken out of Egypt from bondage and from slavery into freedom. And 50 days later, Moses is on the hill, on the mountain, and he's receiving the Torah. Commandments and all of the words of the Torah. All right. And that 50 days, every year we mark that 50 days, Pentecost 50 days, is after Passover to this celebration, right? Okay, so Pentecost is also then this thing where we are reminded that you were taken out of slavery. And you were brought into freedom and into this land of milk and honey. Now, when you harvest your crop, remember those who are continuing to be enslaved to poverty. Remember that you were a stranger in a strange land, and now remember the strangers in your land now. So, here's the things you don't do. You don't take every one of your crops. You leave some for gleaning. And you don't harvest around the edges of your field. That's for the poor. That's for the homeless. That's for people who don't have. So that they can come. Because remember, you were poor. You were a slave. You were homeless. So be reminded. So the celebration of the giving of the Torah is also this reinforcement of remember those who are in need. Right? Whether it is people who are poor, whether it is people who are in internationally, people who are in areas of war or of famine or of all other disasters, remember them. Remember them. Because you were in a disaster at one time. Remember them. Pray for them. And serve them. And maybe it's people who are bound in their shame and their guilt, like Jehun's friend. And watch when you speak their language, how they are set free, how they are liberated from that. It's an amazing thing. It's God at work to liberate us from our oppression and to liberate us from those things in us that continue to oppress us. Things that we refuse to acknowledge until we hear freedom, until we hear love, which is all of our native language. So, Pentecost. On this day, we remember God's pouring out of the Spirit on all nations. And we turn now to pray for those nations. Pray and lift them up and watch what God is up to.